I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast/exclusive. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me today is a special guest, our good friend and exclusive content host, James Dean.
Hello, James Dean, Jimmy Dean.
What do you want me to call you on the internet?
Your mother's lover. Your mother's consensual lover.
Do you want to be? I mean, I'm just gonna call you James. But what do you want? What do you want? Internet. I've never properly, explicitly asked you.
I like going by James Dean Mixes, like in terms of like just when it's related to music stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna call you James regardless. But
yeah.
You may know James. James has been on the show for. You've been on for over a year now.
Yeah. Probably a year and a half.
Yeah, James is the main host for all of our exclusive content that we do, the two of us do together, that I highly recommend. We're going to talk more about our exclusive content a little bit later. The most important thing is that y'all know, like, Spotify kind of fucked us. And long story short, they made someone or their AI made a fraudulent copyright claim that had no basis. Spotify didn't apologize and just took down our show for 2 weeks, which triggered Apple to also take down our show. I'm working with one of my business partners who specializes in podcast marketing because we lost all 100% of our 5-star reviews on Apple, which is a huge hit.
Yeah.
Because not only is that hundreds of reviews, but that's like complete SEO traction. So it's like, if you look for Mixing Podcast, we used to be the number one hit no matter what you search. But now like we're like row 7. So it's like a huge hit. And we're not going to do a push on rating it 5 stars. You can go ahead and do that now. But there's a chance that we can reconnect it to the old platform, which shows that it's been going on since 2019 and with all the reviews and stuff. But there's also a chance that we might just need to reset it, resubmit it, and then do like a big review push where we try to get like 150 reviews within the first 72 hours. We'll let y'all know. But yeah, Spotify fucked us really, really, really bad. We're working back on that. So basically the main thing is that we moved our exclusive content to Patreon. That's our main thing. It's still the same link, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. But we're moving all over to Patreon for that sort of stuff. And we went back to a previous hosting service for our main podcast. Yeah, so don't make your podcasts on Spotify. Put them on Spotify, but don't host it with Spotify or Anchor. Yeah, it's some BS being a digital hostage.
Like, it was difficult uploading through them. We had other issues. But yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Find another means.
It sucked so bad. anyway, I'm upset about that. But welcome back to this fantastic episode. We're going to redo an old episode and kind of bring it up to modern day standards. And James is also a full-time mixer. So the one, I'm going to say this real quick. The great thing about having James on this episode, first off, Lou is unavailable. He's busy doing something else with Exhibit, which is one of his main clients right now. And but the reason why I think James may potentially be just as good, if not better, for this episode is that Lou does everything across the board. Mixing, mastering, live sound, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of good information about mixing and kind of that we could pull from that. Also, Lou and I have great, just great back and forths. We are easily distracted and we're fun. We have great, what is that? What is that? Synergy or whatever. And then, but James is a full-time mixer, also in LA out here, and does nothing other than mix as far as for music. So he probably does other things outside of music.
I have a life. I have, I'm happily married. I like taking photos.
I like how like I end that open-ended. Yeah. All right, but
James
anyway.
Only mixes.
James only mixes.
James has no life outside of mixing. He's really hoping this works because he literally has nothing else going on.
But welcome back to the show, James, as always.
Thank you.
And let's get started. This episode, what is mixing? I think when we did this episode, this is like episode number 3 or something like that, when we first started this podcast in 2019, it's one of our most downloaded episodes because I think people are confused about mixing as a DJ or mixing as any other non-music thing or within music. But we're going to be talking about mixing audio specifically. The caveat for this episode is specifically within a music situation, a pop music situation, like radio music. There is mixing involved in film, TV, composing, arranging, whatever, for video games, for dialogue, for Foley, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what we're talking about is just for like music, like pop music, radio music. All right, across genres, but like mixing music for artists and labels versus mixing music for TV companies, sound libraries, etc. There's a difference. So we're talking about music specifically, like consumer music specifically. And the episode, the thing for this episode is we're going to be kind of going through just general overview here. We're going to be kind of going over the roles of a mixer from at like a beginner level with like your typical beginner clients and going up to how your role changes as a mixer as you become more and more advanced, as well as like the typical processes and thinking and philosophies as a mixer from beginner to advanced as well as like mixing in different roles. Like what does it mean? What is like the goal and purpose of mixing as a producer, as the recording engineer, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to be talking about that, maybe getting into some tangents and nuances as well. But first off, let's define what mixing is and what mixing isn't. Is that cool? So like, first yeah. off, I think it's fair to say mixing is not mastering. mixing is not just applying effects, EQ, compression, et cetera. And it's definitely not a fixing process, right? It's most of the time. I think
it
it's best
be,
to
in theory.
It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I do find myself doing a lot of editing, but technically editing, which includes tuning and correction, timing, and God forbid, comping. These sort of things are typically editing, which is not mixing. We're going to talk about when mixers do some editing and when that's appropriate, when that's not appropriate. But those things are not mixing. Mixing is literally all the recording is done, all the production and arrangement is done, and they get the final files to blend and enhance the intention to the commercial level. I think in film, it would be like, this would be like Photoshop and color grading would be like the equivalent. Like pictures are taken. The composition is already done. You know, the lighting has already been, that's all part of the process. Now you just have very few little limited tools like color grading. And you're just kind of making sure that it looks, you're presenting it in a commercial professional way. And the
you're
cool thing about
what they've already captured. pretty much.
Exactly, exactly. And the cool thing about that comparison, actually, and that metaphor in that sense, is that there's also, like, color grading specifically, there is, like, each, you can assume that color grading for pictures, some color graders like more green in their final output, and some color graders like black and white, and some Photoshoppers really like to edit and correct skin and remove all blemishes. Some people like to keep it really natural. Some people like analog only and keep it very grainy and dirty. And so there's different styles of editing, which is why this is a great comparison, because at the end of the day, a lot of artists and producers will pick a mixer based off of generalized outcomes or intended outcomes or vision, as far as taste goes, but with a lot more nuance, because there's also, we're going to go into that and what that means at a later level. James, do you want to add anything about that? What a mixer is and what a mixer isn't?
Like in terms of, like what mixing is. I always kind of see it as it's that like final bit to give it that radio sound that you have. I think it's very common for an artist, either they like get their first interface and they start recording their own vocals, or even they may even go to say like a commercial studio. And I think if it's their first time, they're very used to how that mixed sound sounds on the radio. And so it could almost throw them off when they hear just their vocal record back without being fully mixed. And so like our job is to kind of almost give it that last professional sound, kind of clean everything up. And I think a lot of times our role is to help give the artist and the producer and the A&R and everyone involved in making the song that last bit of confidence in the product that they pretty much have made all together. A common thing that like we get, you probably get this a lot too, is like hearing people say like, oh, you finally helped me like my voice. Because like a lot of people don't like how almost raw recorded vocal sounds. And so I think our job is just to help give that last bit of confidence and to enhance kind of like their vision of what their song should sound like.
Exactly. I think that's the most important thing, is that at the end of the day, like a good mixer gives confidence. Like there's a psychological reason why an artist, producer, or a label, if it's outside the scope of just process and structure, you know, and systemization of a process, outside of that, the reason why these people hire a mixer and why people pay money for a professional creative service is partially not just like for the end product and elevating the level and opening up the ability for reception by a general audience by raising the level of the craft, but not just that, but it's also exactly as you said, people are paying to fill in for the confidence that they don't have. Like if, for example, Russ is a famous artist who famously mixes all of his own stuff. And he's someone that has a lot of confidence in his mixes. Regardless of whether or not it's good, he is somehow confident enough, or he has a book about it. I'm talking about his delusions, but he is mindfully delusional about his abilities to mix. So he doesn't need to pay someone. He doesn't feel like he's missing out on anything to pay someone to mix. And then other people do. They can't help it. And that's part of it too. Like the reality is, people are paying you to fill in for their confidence. So it's also very important as a mixer to provide that. That is what you're really doing at the end of the day in an overgeneralized, nuanced form. That's a great
point. Oh, one more thing I almost forgot. We just help the music also be able to translate. I think that's important. Like
of course,
you can make the song, it sounds awesome in the studio, and then like it's a classic example. You go to your car, you listen to it on your AirPods, and it doesn't sound nearly as good. A part of our training is we know our monitors, like we know our setup well enough where we know how it's going to translate. And so we're confident that once we do what we do, it'll sound how it's supposed to sound across all mediums, pretty much.
Nice. Yeah. Specialized critical listening skills and equipment, I think is important to mention there. Okay. Yeah. So at a beginning level, at a beginner level, because I'm assuming that there's going to be a lot of like super noobs and beginners to mixing, listening to this episode just because of the title and the clickability of this episode. So we're going to start there. And if we get too advanced, don't worry, hang on. We're gonna get through it. But for the beginner, usually mixing is learning a DAW and basic fundamental processing. Basic fundamental processing includes things like EQ, compression, reverbs, delay, saturation, clipping, etc. It's usually plugins, whether it's on the computer, digital plugins, or outboard analog gear. Mixing is kind of using these limited fundamental tools to change the sonics and levels of all of the individual tracks within a record or a song in order to add commercially consumable sonics and just general cohesion within the track, which should lead to confidence by the artist or whoever's doing the hiring, right? And as well as a great translation of emotion. So if a song is meant to sound angry, a good mix, should use EQ compression, these tools to make the song sonically feel angry, which we'll talk about utilizing emotion a little bit later. But at a very basic level, at the beginner level, mixing is learning your DAW and your plugins, right?
Yeah, and I would say also it's for what I would consider just like the threshold for a good mix, like what makes a good, like there's obviously like good, great, like best, emotional would be, and I think that's the beginner level, is learning how to, when you're mixing, just making sure nothing is happening in the song that will take the listener out. So that could be like S's. The S's could be too loud. It's causing the listener to not want to listen. The vocal's too jumpy, like it keeps popping out too much. You want to use compression for that to keep it level. But what I usually consider like, oh, that's a good mix, like not great, but like at least good, is at least there's nothing happening in the song and the balance of everything that's like taking me out as a listener. It's a very easygoing listening experience for the most.
Yeah, of course. It's this idea. I think I said this in the very, very first What Is Mixing episode years ago, which is like, there's really only one way to make a bad mix. And I'm kind of like, I'm going to kind of disagree with myself here, but it was like, the only way to make a bad mix is for it to be distracting, where like the mix pulls you out. If I define it right, then I'm not going to disagree with myself, but let me qualify it correctly. What I don't mean is a lack of balance. A lack of balance is oftentimes a good thing. Being distracting does not mean a lack of balance. What I mean by distracting is that there's so much low end that it doesn't feel comparable to anything else that's commercially available right now. For example, reggae as a genre typically has a ton of low end. But if you give reggae low end to a folk song, it will be distracting. Granted, I'm sure there are creative ways to incorporate both. And like fusions of genres exist, right? But there is a very obvious and definite feeling among professional, non-professional, average consumers, and critical listeners alike that songs and mixes can sound unintentional or intentional. There's a reason why, like, some songs with a ton of distortion, like Billie Eilish, which would in previous years be technically incorrect because of how distorted it is, it still feels very intentional as it adds to the emotion. There are other songs where there's obviously a lack of intention with the distortion, and it just is so distracting and sounds shitty. This is another part of it. It doesn't take a critical ear or a critical listener or a professional of any kind to be able to tell when something is done poorly and unintentionally and when something is done well, incorporated well, adds to the emotion, adds to the vision of the song, and is done very well, right? So bad versus good in that sense.
Yeah. And I would say if you're a beginner mixer, maybe having self-doubt about your abilities or skill, I think as long as, because you're likely also working with people on the same level as you, as long as what you're doing is A, like making the song or the person that you're working with more enhanced sound better, and at least makes them feel more confident in it, I think you're still doing your job. Because if you're a fairly beginner mixer, you're likely working with a fairly beginner producer or artist. And so since you're focusing on this, you'll likely be able to at least help their song sound a little bit better. So I think you should still be able to, you know, feel confident about the services you're offering at that point.
I think so too. That, yeah, mixing is such... Okay, so anyway, we talked about beginner level mixing and what that is. As you kind of develop into a more intermediate level, you're gonna find out that when you're at the beginner level, mixing is mostly how to use your tools. You can't hear compression. You could barely hear EQ. And you may not have the setup or probably most likely just the critical listening skills, which is a skill, by the way. It's not a lack of equipment. It's not a lack of equipment. If you give me the same Temu $10 headphones, I could probably still outmix you given some practice and some time to get used to them.
Temu's a big bet.
Yeah, dude, the $10 Temu headphones. Yeah. Hey, $10 on Temu is pretty bougie. I'm not gonna lie to you there.
No, yeah, you
more like
buy
$3 headphones.
You can buy the website. Man.
In the beginner level, it's mostly figuring out the tools. It's a lot of guessing and not really knowing where to go. That's just how it usually is. It's a lot of just figuring things out and figuring out what the tools do. As you slowly start to be able to hear compression and like figuring out what your tools do, and you've spent thousands of hours on YouTube videos, then mixing at an intermediate level starts to become based on intent. So it's not just habit. So maybe in the beginning level, you're going to be using a lot of presets or doing things as people tell you on the internet and not really thinking much about it. It's very difficult to be mindful as a beginner because you haven't developed these skills to know what to pay attention to and to become mindful. But as you slowly start to learn what your tools are, what tools that you prefer, which ones are the easiest to use, you're slowly going to find yourself not using... premeditated workflows, or presets. You're not going to be using habits. You're going to be using more like intention. So like as you mix more and more, you're going to find that you're going to develop your own workflow and your own system and your own ways of doing it. There's still some lack of technique or knowledge involved, but it's going to start to become a lot more intentional, a lot more mindful. There's going to be understandings of more advanced techniques as well. We could talk about like parallel compression, automation, saturation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But mostly at an advanced level, I think it's going to become a maturation of sonic, sonic maturity? I said maturation. So a maturation of like sonic intention, I think is the best thing. A maturation of sonic intention. And then probably at the intermediate level, if you haven't already, and assuming that you're intending to do this, because the podcast is for those that are looking to do this more for clients, like not just for yourself, you're going to start finding clients or you're going to do your own personal releases with higher expectations. You're just going to be a lot more mindful in general. And I think to get to a point where you're good enough to be able to be mindful and like where mindful has benefit, I think it takes at least an intermediate level to get to.
Yeah, I remember last year, I think it was on one of the exclusive episodes, I was talking about how I was finally, I think I was at this specific threshold at intermediate. And it's a weird feeling in terms of just working with clients because that's when it starts to shift. Because when you're in the beginner phase and you're trying to find all these clients, it's almost like you're at a spot where you have to prove to them that you're a good mixer. And they're like, okay, they're a good mixer. And then they'll want to keep working with you. Or I feel like once you get to the intermediate phase with higher expectations, it's now expected that you're gonna mix great. And so it was, I remember back then I was like super stressed because I was like, oh no, like these guys now, I'm not proving it. They now expect me to do like a great job with it. But yeah, I think that's also a thing is like, it's now expected that you could do a great job. It's no longer, you're not gonna like blow someone, like super surprise someone. Because at this point, your clients have probably worked with a few other mixers who are good at what they do.
Yeah. As an intermediate mixer, especially if you are more business-minded and trying to start or continue your freelance journey, which is what most of mixing is in the pop music world, it's almost all freelance, no insurance benefits, all 1099 work, right? Sending out a lot of W-9s. What you're in America, at least, these are American tax
benefits. Hardly nowhere. We don't know benefits.
Another thing too is that you're going to be dipping your hand into systemizations for yourself. So, like, where do you source clients? How do you manage your, and like balance and juggle all of your projects? It may be a lack of projects to begin with. This level, as well as the beginner level, you should still be doing a lot of free work or really cheap work if your intention is sourcing clients. Now, there are downsides and upsides to doing free work or very cheap work, things that we've talked about in other episodes, so we're not going to get into the nuance of that right now. But in the beginner to intermediate steps, I think, intermediate, just like you said, you kind of have an idea what you're going on. You probably still completely miss the mark sometimes. But you also, in general, you're getting a lot more consistent. And I think that's the thing too, is like going from beginner to intermediate is like, I think even a beginner can make good mixes. If they're like fully in tune with their emotions and they're not caught up with their typical non-psychotic egos where that would make them question everything and they're very self-aware that they're unknowledgeable and like that stops them from feeling things, right? What a beginner is usually incapable of feeling the songs, right? But like, I think there's some beginners out there that are just so in tune with a vision and idea and how the song should sound that they can get a fantastic mix right from the gate. I think there's a few and far between.
I think that happens. Like I have a few mixes from like my beginner phase where I'm still like today, like surprised. I'm like, oh, I did that good of a mix back then. Most of the mixes back then, you know, were not nearly as good, but like, yeah, every now and again, you like back then you'll get like a few mixes that are like, okay, this sounds good. I'm pretty confident in that.
And I think that's another thing too, as you transition more into the intermediate stage, is that it's more becomes a question of consistency rather than a question of like objectively better on a per song basis.
Yeah.
And the last thing with advanced, we're going to move into advanced. Like, what is mixing and the role of a mixer as you moved into advanced levels? And I think the first thing, most importantly, is excellent customer service and project management.
Yes.
Mixing is excellent. Okay, this is super important. You wouldn't have expected that for me to say this, but if you are working with labels or a ton of artists, now that you have a ton of work coming in or a lot more work coming in, even if it's not a ton, you should be doing this. Most of your work and the reason why people hire you is you being good is expected, right? At this level.
At that point, everyone's a great mixer.
Yeah. So it's not about how you mix. And you might unintentionally have already become created a brand or have become known by the A&Rs, the labels, the artists, the managers to have a specific sound or work especially well with specific genres. Typically, completely unintentional, right? Possibly intentional, depending on the subgenres and stuff, but typically unintentional and fairly unintentional. And then, but mostly people are hiring you because you don't ghost people. You are really good at communicating. You are completely consistent. You can give them deadlines and you can finish deadlines. You can accommodate for artists. Say a label says, we have a 6-song album that we need you to mix by next weekend. You're able to do that, even if it's for a premium. But the point is you have a system to onboard to receive the files. You have a system to then get them on track and on their schedule. It is at a higher level. It's less about the ability of mixing. It's about the service of a mixer. And this is the biggest, like, we could talk about the craft of mixing at an advanced level, but I genuinely don't think that that's the difference between intermediate to advanced mixers.
Yeah.
The difference between intermediate and advanced mixers is that intermediate people still use paper to-do lists if you're lucky, may let some projects slip in between the cracks. They're not really good at communicating with clients, and the clients are often left in the dark of like not knowing what to do. What's the process of the song? Hey, we requested stems and like the clean version of the mix like a week ago, and you haven't told us if you're doing it at all and like when to expect the new files. We're just totally in the dark here. Versus like an advanced mixer, it doesn't matter how long it takes. It's not about how long it takes. It's about the communication and service-oriented customer service that the mixer provides that to the label, to the management, to the artist. Because at the end of the day, for a big computer machine of systems, like if you're a label, like the mixer is a small cog of a big machine. And it's small enough where if you hold up the process, not even creatively speaking, just technically by ghosting someone or letting a project slip between the cracks ever, like one time even, yeah, is enough means for an A&R to be like, hey, we're just never working with you again. Also, you're blacklisted. That's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Like this is not a religion where you can just get excommunicated necessarily unless you're like been at a Diddy party or something. And then
there's quite a bit of people still in who, yeah. Let's start listing names, DK.
Yeah. But I mean, the point is, I think the difference is mostly customer service oriented rather than mindful mixing and technical creative mixing.
Yeah, you there's a few more other things, that, like,
but yeah, go ahead.
I would say this, like, you gotta keep in mind that, like, from like an artist or like the label's perspective, is essentially mixing is like the second to last, like right before mastering part of this long process. Usually by now they have their deadline. They've already announced possibly by now when the song will come out, and you're the last like rushed, almost most a lot of times rushed part stage of this process. And so if they know that you're someone that they could rely on, that like they know that they could text like DK, like, hey DK, like we need this, we have the song, it needs to be done by now, those are things that they usually give to people that they have enough experience with, that they know that they can rely on you and that you're not going to hold up the process, or they're not going to have to worry pretty much if they reach out to you for a song that needs to be mixed.
Absolutely. Also, I need to make another, not correction, but I need to add on a little bit more information as well. From a technical perspective, usually with beginner to intermediate clients, it's going to be a lot of, first off, after you communicate with the client, because this is a big risk, right? But typically clients want you to save their song at the beginner and intermediate level. Because when you're at the beginner and intermediate level, when you're charging less or not at all, you're going to find that your clients also have smaller budgets, means that they have less experience. So if they have less experience and they aren't paying for a good recording engineer, or they're recording it all themselves or whatever, you're going to find that they want you to make it sound completely different. That they want you to make the drums actually hit because they couldn't figure out how the fuck to do that themselves, right? So that's an important part of it. But what's really counterintuitive and what's fascinating with how this industry works with mixing is that the more advanced you become, the less you do. From a technical skill level, knowing when not to do something is probably the most difficult skill to actually learn as a mixer. Think about this from the psychology of the engineer, right? General psychology here. If you're a service provider and a freelancer, and you get paid a specific budget, It is not normal for the person receiving the money to do the services to not want to give the value, the full value of that paid for service. For example, if for some reason you got paid $200, you want to at least give $200 of service. And if a $200 mixer all of a sudden gets paid $2,000 for a mix, now what they're going to do psychologically is that they're going to try to overcompensate and do way too much, because they assume value is based on time and what, like the effort of how you do it. So they overcompensate value by doing more things. This is not the case. Like from an artistic creative endeavor, that is completely counterintuitive to the end goal, right? Again, which is instilling confidence and emotional translation. Doing more is a understandably human coping mechanism to deal with the inferiority that you feel when you get paid too much. And you want to compensate by adding value in that way. Do not, never, ever, ever, ever add value by doing more. Because at the end of the day, I do think like one emotionally technical aspect is that people that get paid thousands of dollars per song, per mix, are emotionally so well stable, technically so stable that they can spend on a mix 30 minutes. And if they're done, they're done. And there's no feeling of inferiority or no need to feel that they need to overcompensate for the budget versus technical skill. That this is a huge mistake that mixers make. One, probably the biggest mistake that mixers make across the board, even including advanced levels. Like one time, I made $3,000 an hour because it took me 30 minutes to mix a song. And it paid me a little over $1,000, right? For the song. And that's just like, most mixers can't develop the confidence to be okay with sending out a mix immediately to the client after only spending 30 minutes on a song. It's not even about skill. It's just about knowing when not to do something. And the song, that specific scenario, the song was perfectly balanced. Everything was good. I just did very minute touch-ups. And I knew I had the confidence that this is what's best for the song. So I felt no insecurity sending this mix to the client. Does that make sense? Because like you spend 30 minutes on a song, you're like, oh my gosh, I should have done a car check. I should have done this. I should have like spent a few more days on it, but I should have spent more hours on it. And you're just going to be there. And what you're going to do is you're going to overcompensate and do the one thing that you should never do as a mixer, which is like give qualifying statements to the person you're sent to the client after you send it. Hey, this only took me 30 minutes. You know, if you need more versions, just by the way, this is just the V1. If you need, which just leads to you sounding incompetent again, which is against the first purpose, which is giving confidence. If you desire to overcompensate by giving yourself qualifiers, like a singer that says at open mic night that says like, oh, I just had a cold this weekend. This is my first time. I had a cold this weekend. You know, I'm a little sick right now.
My dog just died. Sorry, guys. I might
If you do that as a mixer, that is a big, big no-no. You cannot do that. And a lot of mixers, and this is, I found myself doing this a lot of times, it's hard to sit with yourself and not say anything after you sent it off to the client. Or not take feedback personally, which is another beginner to advanced difference. Because when you're advanced and you're so confident, you don't take mixed feedback personally. That feeling or need to be validated or to feed your superiority complex, which comes from a place of feeling inferior, no longer is part of the equation because you know, you have a proven track record with yourself, with the client. They know you're doing good work. So even if they have brutal feedback, that doesn't go against like, it's not personal because they know you have a track record for yourself as well as they know your track record enough to know that this is just a one-time thing and you can fix it and I believe that you can fix it, right? Anyway, I'm starting to get on a rant. So stop me, James.
I would say also, because like one could look at it as like not as much work, but like the way I look at it, because like when I get those mixes that like you said, it takes 30 minutes or like an hour and a half, and you like just do it quick. It's like a very satisfying feeling because I feel like it kind of shows you're at a point where you have such a trained ear. Because it takes a really trained ear to be able to know those very few moves that do need to be made. Whether it's like, you know, a very slight amount of this one track needed like just a little bit of an EQ cut, and that like is what helped bring the mix that little bit. But I think it takes a very professional trained ear to be able to recognize those small moves that do need to be made. And also like DK said, it's like almost a discipline thing to know when you hear like you're going through the tracks and you're like, this one sounds good, I don't need to do anything to it. And then you can like move on just like confidently with that.
Exactly. Like the point of being advanced isn't that you can do mixes fast. That's not the point, but it's knowing when to stop, knowing when you're done and being confident with that. There's a quote that I heard the other day that I'm still processing and I don't know if I fully agree with, but I think this is a good quote for the sake of where we're at right now in this conversation is like creativity is not how you do things. Creativity is knowing when you're done. Because an artist can just add paint to a canvas all day, can keep adding compressors and saturators, but like The creativity is just deciding when to be done.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm done now. You know? And I think that's a big part of this conversation that we're talking about. Lastly, go ahead, James.
I was just gonna say, I think mixers at a certain point, they start to develop and almost give them themselves almost a checklist or something, just of like a when they could start to recognize, okay, this mix is like, I'm done. Like a lot of them, they'll just turn the volume down and just listen through. And if nothing jumps out, they're like, all right, I think this is good. I usually like check it on my AirPods, the last little bit of my mix. And I'm like, okay, if this sounds like how the rest of the songs I listen to on my AirPods when I go to the gym or something sound, then I'm good. So I think everyone starts to develop their own way of kind of being able to tell, all right, yeah, this mix is done. I think I'm good.
Great. Awesome. Okay, there's one other thing. Oh, we just talked about, let me just put a cap on the idea of beginner to intermediate is a lot of fixing the mix. We can talk a little bit about like the role of editing as well for briefly. But at the advanced level, very, very rarely does any artist with a budget that fits the current budget of where you're at an advanced level, right? Is very rarely do they send you something shitty. Very rarely do they send you something that wasn't completely intentional with their own processes.
Yeah.
This is why advanced mixers honor the rough mix and honor the original intention and mostly reference the mix with the rough song, not just alongside commercial releases that you're referencing to, but like the rough song, the rough mix itself, is because there's like an original intention and vision that the artist has. And if they have higher budgets, that means they typically have spent more time and more intention doing it. They either have the skill and they're making enough money from music to be able to afford you, or the label has provided a bunch of producers to work alongside you or whatever. So if you do more, you're typically changing the vision. So even if you're improving it, but changing the vision and the sound and the emotional intention is not the purpose of an advanced mixer. It's enhancing. And so sometimes that is like a 20 to 30 minute mix. Sometimes it's not taking any money because you have no reason to do this. Like artistically, it's done before it even comes to you, right? Very rarely the case, but sometimes that is the case. But it's not like this needs to be fixed. This needs fixed. Like at an advanced level, if you hear vocals out of tune, it's probably intentional. But also you've developed your skill enough to realize and listen if that was intentional based off the genre of the songs. For example, if Billie Eilish in one of her softer songs was slightly out of tune, I probably won't fix it. Versus like your local neighborhood pop artist that's trying to sound like Maroon 5, I probably will fix it, right? And that's another thing too. Really briefly on the idea of editing is, although editing is technically not part of the mixing process, at the beginner to intermediate stages when you're charging less, you want to make sure that you communicate with the artist what they want. Do you want me to fix this? Do you want me to edit this? And confirm that. First, to avoid any problems, like if they expected you to do that because they don't understand the role of a mixer. So you want to make sure that you're clear on those and have an opportunity to upcharge or charge more, or to determine that you will include that for your price and just take it on the head. Who's to say? There's no right answer there. But the point is to over communicate and confirm, especially with beginner to intermediate, because there's a lot more assumptions at the beginner to intermediate levels. So don't be a victim of assumption and over communicate at those levels. Lastly, even especially at an advanced level when the budgets are higher, and they ask me to do a little bit of editing, it's more based on if I can do it or not. For example, I'm like a former frontman of a wedding band. Like I'm a professional touring frontman when I was in college. I'm really good at correcting vocals and doing vocal producing. So sometimes, and the client, a couple songs ago with Odatari, one of my clients from APG, right? Odatari, they did a song with ATEEZ, which is a Korean K-pop band. And they said, can you add a couple extra glitches? Not just mix the song, but we need you to do some producing, like some glitches. Can you glitch the vocals at a few points here and there? And I did, at no add-on. And with no points as well. Points meaning like royalty points for producing. a part of the master. And it's great that I was able to do that, right? With my history and my knowledge in the DAW and my general creative ability. I think if for an A&R to ask a general non-creative mixer, can you do some glitches? They can technically do them, but they are very uncomfortable with the ambiguity of like, you just want me to make the creative decision on your behalf. A lot of mixers will be uncomfortable with making creative decisions. But luckily, because of my background, I'm able to do that and accommodate for that. And I don't charge extra for it because I'm already charging so much. And that's another thing to consider as well. Although there are different businesses and different people that regardless of whether you charge, it is an add-on. I just do think that in general, personal philosophy and opinion, you should be charging enough to be willing to do those things happily if they ask or if they don't. And that's more of an emotional thing that you're going to be fighting with your ego based on how you feel like the level that you're at. And slowly pushing your own ego over time as you develop your skills and continue to try different price points and different services. Okay, anything? Let's finalize that. Put a cap on that, James.
I would say the only other editing I can think of that still would, I guess, in a way fall on the mixer is like if you're doing a clean mix, like going through cutting out like the swear words, making sure you're not too numb to swear words to be able to recognize which ones you need to cut out if that's what's wanted. There's a mix I'm doing right now where it's like a longer song and then they want like a shorter abridged cut, but like that edit is literally just cutting off the last minute of it. But other than that, I think that like, yeah, past a certain point, it's like they've already been very decisive in what they want. Even at like that, this point, like you don't even do much with reverbs as like a mixer. Like usually they have their reverbs and delays and everything figured out and printed. And it kind of starts to become less and less that you're adding your own reverbs or delays on there. But yeah. That just goes into they're already dialed in the exact sound. And a lot of times reverb and delay is their sound.
Yeah, that's true. Like more and more as I go up the ranks, like more less and less do I actually add my own reverbs and delays.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Is it important to say that also the mixer's role is to bounce alternative mixes like instrumental, acapella, TV, performance if requested, and then as well as stems and knowing how to do those things. That's part of the role of a mixer too. Again, file management is part of the role of a mixer across all stages. Maybe not at the beginning stage because you just don't know what the fuck is going on, but it's like usually because of a lack of knowledge, not because you're not supposed to. But if you can from a beginner stage, just be in the habit of whenever you finish a mix, finalize it, bounce the instrumental, bounce the acapella, bounce the TV mix, go online and figure out what that means. Usually a TV mix, is determined by your publisher or by the people requesting it. But for example, Universal Music Group and Sony Music Group has standardized it to typically mean everything but the lead vocal. So just mute the lead vocals, keep all the background vocals. And then some publishing and distributors mean TV mix is anything with lyrics. So even if the background vocals has words, if it's hummings or mms or like ad libs, that's cool. Oohs, ahs, that's cool. But like if there's any like words, then take those out. Most of the time, I think generically, if you're going to start adding TV mixes by default at the end of your service, just mute the lead vocals.
Yeah, and I think you and Lou did an episode on bouncing stems and deliverables.
Yeah. Right? I think this is something that could be another episode completely. But doing that and learning how to do that is part of being a mixer for sure, 100%. And I would get into the habit of doing that from the beginning.
Yeah, and keeping a backup. That's just...
Yeah.
Keeping a backup of your mix session, everything. I keep it on like both a hard drive and on like the cloud.
Just
to have... It's just... Because that's one of the things. That's a part of your value also as a mixer is... that's just another factor of being reliable is... And I guess that's at a certain point why mixers could still feel comfortable charging such a high fee for what they do is... In a sense, too, you're kind of someone that they could potentially be calling back on a year or two from now for a file. And I think that
file management
also justifies part of what people will pay for a mixer.
Alongside file management and like project management, like for example, like an A&R will all of a sudden be like, Hey DK, can you just send me real quick the instrumental for this one song that we did a couple months ago? And because I have it all meticulously named and filed and organized in a cloud service that I use called FilePass that we highly recommend and are sponsored by mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass. What I do is as soon as they send a text, it could be as if, assuming that I'm awake and I see it, right? It takes me no effort to pause what I'm doing, go on my phone, pull up the link, find that project, send the link over text immediately. And that's part of the value that they're paying me for. That file management, project management, being able to be on top of it. And that becomes more and more important. Imagine working with Kanye when like the deadline for the release, like the song is literally already released and your job is to mix it. And they're just going to be, then the hit label's like, hey, we're going to update the mixes after you're done mixing it. Like they...
Yeah.
The deadline, the pressure. This is a tip from Dale Becker, a mastering engineer out in Pasadena out here in LA. Yes, as you go up the ranks, like there's something to be said about boundaries and making sure that you're like healthy. But if you want to go up the ranks, there's something to be said about way too many people set too many boundaries too quickly. Something that's a whole nother episode that we could talk about. It's okay, let's move on to, it's a very delicate balance, something that you need to prioritize. Okay, we're not going to, that's a whole wormhole, rabbit hole that we're not going to get into right now. Okay, what is the role of mixing for a producer? There's other episodes about defining producers. You can Google this. Maybe this is a whole nother episode right here. This is not the episode four. But as a producer, usually there's someone that's part of the creative process of the song, possibly even recording. The rough mix and balance, it's meant to make a rough mix. And the rough balancing and the mix and everything that you're typically doing with the same exact tools, EQ, compression, saturation, whatever, etc. The point of that is not to have necessarily a finished product unless that's what you're trying to do. Usually, typically the point of mixing for a producer is to get to a point where you and the artist are dancing. It's like a complete and total emotional transference at the expense of some technical know-how. So it's like, yeah, it's not the cleanest and the loudest and most balanced mix, but right now, how this is feeling is exactly the way that we intended it. So it's like very intentional mix. So if that means the hi-hats are way too loud technically, but that's how the song vibes, do that, right? Because it's not about technically correct. It is completely creative and emotional. And a big part of that is arrangement as well. I think like as a producer, more often as a producer than a mixer is like arrangement. Like having a different kick drum for the chorus and the verse, if that's what you want to do, if that adds to the vibe of the song, is something that you should do. Like arrangement. We should actually mute the tracks. Just because you've created tracks for every single, like you have keys going through the entire song, drums going through the entire song, bass, synth, string sections, horns going through the entire song. Just because you have something going through in the entire song, a make or break with a lot of great songs is the arrangement. Just because you have it doesn't mean you should be using it. Like go ahead and like mute sections and change sections, swap sections out, use different sounds. This is all part of like the mixing of the production producer.
And the arrangement transfers over a lot to like how it will mix. Like if you look at some of the best, the albums that have won like best engineered album or even just the nominees, all of them from the point of when they were being recorded, you could tell the arrangement, the producer was very thoughtful of, this is also sonically how all the instruments I'm adding are going to balance. And that translates over to it being very well mixed is because it was already made like, okay, we know that we're going to have a big, let's say 808 or like a huge bass instrument. I'm going to make sure I don't add any other elements in this song production wise that will eat up that space because I already know you have some idea of how balance and acoustics and frequency balance work. To where from the point of your production, you understand how things are going to end up in the mix and in the master. So I think that's also a big part of the producer, especially like those are the very good, like how DK and I said, where at a certain point, you're not, when you get really good clients, it's not like you're not fixing as much because they already know, it's usually producers who know what they're doing sound wise.
Exactly. Typically the role of an artist with mixing is, number one, communicating the vision to the mixer. I want it to sound like these songs, or if it came out of a 1940s soundtrack, I want it to sound like tonally like a jazz song, but with modern instruments, right? Combining jazz with EDM or whatever the heck the artist's vision is. The artist's job is to be a visionary, to have intention. And being able to communicate that to the mixer may be difficult, but is absolutely necessary and critical to the process of mixing. Number two role for artists in the process of mixing is knowing when to let things go and knowing when to be hands-on. It's not a bad thing to have demo-itis, because sometimes this is a word of caution to mixers out there. And I made a little short on Instagram, on like an Instagram reel, about the danger of the word demo-itis, which usually means it's like, you infer that the artist or the person sending the song knows what they're talking about less than you, the engineer or the mixer, which is just completely incorrect. Like oftentimes mixers make things too clean and the artist is like, no, we want it more dirty. And the problem is that artists typically have a hard time communicating with usual language, which is why they're artists, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, it's very easy to overcome and like use authority to tell the artist that they don't know what they're talking about. It's very easy to do that, but it's like a very small-minded move to do that. Don't do that. But so there's a time when an artist's job is to know when to get hands-on and knowing when to let things go. I have most of my higher level clients, part of the reason why they talk to their manager who talks to my manager who talks to me, and like that separation of process is partially pragmatic in a creative scenario, in like a creative process. Like when the artist is talking to me directly, then it's very easy to overanalyze and to like want to overcorrect and like want to control everything. But when you kind of remove yourself from the process, like they don't know who I am, they don't know what I look like, they don't know how the notes and the revision requests even get to me, right? That like practical removal from the process kind of forces them. It's like a creative boundary. It's like creative limitations to them. And like, and it serves that way oftentimes, whether that's done intentionally or not. To me, it feels like that. That's like a pretty practical outcome to removed positions like that. So if you have a problem of being over-controlling and you want to take a step back, like personally, like go out of your way to try to create systems to disconnect. So it's like, it's not about knowing, like letting things go. Like, don't worry about letting things go. It's about knowing when to let things go, and when letting things go is to the benefit of your vision, and when to be more hands-on is also to the benefit of your vision. The artist's role is to be a visionary.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
No, I like that. And for mixers, just, I would say stop complaining about getting mix revision notes. I think,
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's their song. It's not your song, it's their song. And so you should do all, like, I think the role of the mixer is to do all you can to make sure they love their song the way they want it.
I mean, yeah, it's really interesting. Psychologically, it makes total sense why a lot of mix engineers do have small, fragile egos. For example, we're going to talk, like, I'm not going to get, this is a whole nother episode topic. If you're very creative, high in openness, you're going to have more neuroticism. People that are typically more neurotic will take things personally. A superiority complex, people that like impose themselves to be more superior in the craft, typically that is based off a need of validation from feeling significantly inferior. This is parts of individual psychology from Adlerian modality that I really, really like. If you're new to the podcast, I'm deeply into psychology and philosophy, especially relating it to mixing and with music in general. This is one of those things. I am not a psychologist myself. I have no accreditations. That being said, just trust me that when you take things personally, it is 100% your fault. Even at the beginner level, when the artist wants to make what you believe to be objectively worse decisions, don't be an idiot and try to prove superiority and not give them the best customer service. Your job is not to make a mix objectively better. This is one of the things mixing is not. making a mix objectively better. What is objective other than the target that the client gives to you? This is one of the problems of mixing, practicing, mixing in a void. Something that I've talked about in other episodes as well, which is taking practice stems without a client to present them to, without a client to give you notes on, and you just mix for your own ego to what you've self-created to be an objective finishing point. That doesn't exist in the real world. In the real world, when you're working with clients and artists, they've created their own objective target, which may be completely different from the way that you envisioned it. And always, 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 because you are a service provider, that's goal is not to give an objective finish, but to provide the finish that they want. Does that make sense? To provide the end that they want according to their vision and goals. It is never, ever, at all levels, ever acceptable to pull a power move like that and to just be upset or take notes personally. A lot of artists don't know how to communicate. They might be fucking autistic. Who knows? But just because a note that comes via email or text or a phone call sounds personal, don't take it personal. You're a service worker. Like, be service-minded, service-oriented in that sense. Okay, sorry, a little bit of a tangent there.
No one wants to hire a mixer that is pushing back all the time.
Exactly.
Remember that. That's something that's going to be remembered afterwards. It's like, oh, he was hard to work with.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Any sort of, if you look at any survey of complaints of people hiring mixers, it's almost always communication or communication style or lack of.
Hardly ever the mix.
It's hardly ever the mix. To a surprising near 90 to 100% ratio. Rarely. And that's including $5 Fiverr mixers.
Yeah. Ask a few friends why they hired their mixer and a lot of the
why they like their mixer and why they don't.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the reasons will be outside of the mix itself.
Yeah. They'll probably eventually be like, oh, because they're good at mixing, because they're good at the craft. But why? What do you mean by they're good at it? What makes them good at it? And if you ask them to break it down, it's because they always send me files on time. They're very timely. They're easy to work with. They're easy to communicate. They're very pleasant, happy people that figured their shit out. So they're not projecting their own trauma onto me.
they'll always say that.
Don't be a dumbass, dude. And this is the reason why that's such a touchy topic for me is because I remember doing that myself. And at this moment in time, it was such an ego-driven dumb move. Dumb move that has cost me more money and clients than I wish to admit. Okay. We've talked about just what mixing is in general. Okay, just some common, let's talk about some advice for growth and just some common pitfalls is don't overcome your inferior feelings of inferiority by overmixing and overprocessing. Again, the service that you're providing, especially if you're taking money, is not based on how much effort you put into something. It's not based on how many plugins you use or how many inserts you use or how many times you use parallel processing or how loud you can get the master. That is, don't overcompensate by overmixing and overprocessing. James, I'm sure that you've done that at times, many times too. Any personal anecdotes or anything like that?
With overmixing and overprocessing?
Yeah. To overcome this feeling to overcompensate.
I would say, I was literally just thinking of that, some tips. It's figure out what you're overcompensating for. We've talked before about how important it is to just have a clean conscience and how that's a really good way to combat imposter syndrome. Because usually we overprocess because we feel like I'm getting paid too much for this mix and I feel like I'm not doing enough. So whatever it is you need to do to figure out how to feel confident going into a mix, I think is what's needed. Whether that's read the manuals for your plugins just so you understand them well. Or that's doing a bunch of for me, what helped me get really confident in being quick with my decision making and mixing was just doing speed mix, practicing a speed mix for 30 minutes. And that's what I needed. But figure out what it is that you need to, what's causing you to feel insecure as a mixer. Because once you get over that and once you start feeling very secure in yourself as a mixer, everything else kind of comes a lot better. And you just all of a sudden you get better as a mixer when you're more confident. I don't know how to describe it, but when you're very confident in what you're doing, like it just helps your mixing a ton too.
Yes. Do not underestimate the power and influence of experience. Do not negate experience, which is often time-based. Like, yes, you can cram 10 songs a day in your college years, but sometimes it just takes years. Be patient with yourself. And lastly, this is on a personal note, especially in our industry, which is full of highly open, highly neurotic creatives that have a difficult, like everybody that works in this industry and has stuck through it is kind of the creative black sheep in their own family. Like that's everyone. If you want to talk about everybody, like everyone in this industry feels autistic, whether or not they are or not, doesn't matter. Like everyone feels that way. They just feel like they're totally misunderstood, which is why they're doing this, right? It's a typical factor of being highly creative is to feel lonely and misunderstood. Okay. So it is on a personal level, part of overcoming this is a lot of personal development. Taking the time, whatever that is. If you want to use religion as your gateway to overcome yourself and to learn about yourself and to develop more compassion for yourself and others, do that. If it means a lot of self-help books, if that means a lot of psychology, if that means a lot of philosophy, if that means just getting some help somewhere, doing therapy, all of the, like, I genuinely think therapy will make you more money from your clients than like that specific compressor plugin.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely think so. I like figuring your shit out. And we've talked about, that's another episode as well, like clearing your conscience and what that means and like the value of being honesty and being totally honest with yourself, not even necessarily with clients, but especially with yourself and how that leads to overcoming your inferiority complexes that you may feel, your superiority complexes, how that leads to, what did you say earlier that, imposter syndrome. And where that usually, that the current modern day hypotheses of where that usually comes from, the feelings of nihilism as well, and how to process that feeling, etc. Okay, going off about this, that again, therapy is therapy and going to IKEA. That's a whole nother episode too. Going to IKEA has more bang on your buck than like getting an outboard compressor, okay? Okay, last couple things. So don't overmix, don't overprocess. I think from the beginner to intermediate level, the most common pitfall is not using reference tracks. So it's like they'll use speakers or headphones, speakers in, especially new speakers in a room that they're not comfortable in because they just haven't spent the time listening to it. And then you're asked to, let's just keep going with that comparison, asked to mix a reggae track. Or no. Let's do asked to mix a country track, right? And you give it like hip hop or reggae low end just because you couldn't hear it on your headphones. That is so easily avoided by just listening to other country songs, like comparing your current mix in its current state to other songs. And that's literally the only thing that you need to do. Like if you just reference once, because even my six-year-old son can do this. Like, he'll be able to not articulate why, but he'll be like, this one sounds like this one, or I like this one more. Like, he's got taste, and it doesn't take a critical listener to be able to differentiate between. But like, take the time to use references. That like avoids 90% of the mistakes that people make in the beginner to intermediate level. And at the advanced level, it's mostly referencing rough tracks, because at that point, you've spent thousands of hours with your specific speakers in your specific room, listening to tons of different songs, and you're probably keeping up and maintaining your catalog of what's currently in right now by listening to top 40 tracks, because creating a repertoire in a data bank of current modern standards of mixing and production is part of the role of a mixer. Is like you are a professional cataloger of production techniques and understandings. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. I think that's it. Really?
Yeah.
James?
Closing notes. I would say notice that like a vast majority of what we talked about didn't have much to do with the mixing skills themselves. It's more of what's going on around the mixing skills. It's like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the drummer from Rush, Neil Peart. He started taking lessons again as a drummer when he was in his later years and became a way better drummer because of it. And what made him a way better drummer and that the new drummer instructor taught him is not what was happening on the hits, it's what was happening between the hits. And that it greatly improved his technique so that when he did hit, it made it a lot better. And I think that translates a lot over to like mixing, a lot of other aspects. But I would say, and obviously still, you still want to become a, get better with just the mixing skills themselves. Like DK and I, we both have mixers that we love their mixes, like very consistently. We love their mixes, but we're not going to name names, but like, I think DK and I also have some very successful, very well-known mixers that we don't think hit the are that well on the mixing side, but they do amazing at everything else around mixing. And so they still make an insane amount of money, still have all these awards for their mixing. And I think that's pretty telling as well. Keep working on both, I guess I would say. Just make sure you don't forget one of the two, whether it's mixing or the stuff you do business-wise around it.
Yeah,
they kind of feed each other.
I think my last thought is I hope that this episode kind of gives you more insight onto why using your ears is the ultimate form of advice. If you want to learn technical skills, there's literally very little better, like not even school and classes are better than going on YouTube, hearing, seeing someone use that specific compressor or EQ and then having them A-B it in the video. So like in YouTube... Excuse me. In YouTube, they will show you how to use this specific compressor, show you the settings, their thoughts on it, and then they usually show you how that compressor is used in specific scenarios and how that changes the sonics in that specific scenario. Like, here's what it sounds like on this drum bus. Like, that is education, like, 20 years ago, unfathomable. Like, you couldn't even do that. You could barely do that in school. You might get like one class a week doing that, you know? And now you could just binge that for thousands of hours as much as you want. There's very little better. And the cool thing about YouTube, as much as we hate misinformation, I'm getting to a point now that I'm actually a big fan of people learning, just learning anything. Like that drive for getting better is an important part of advancing your skills and more importantly, your career. Like that... unquenchable thirst for more knowledge and advancing your craft through knowledge and skill is what's going to drive you into the higher tiers of mixing. There's a video by Panorama Mastering. Nick did a really great job. It's like the difference between the beginner to intermediate to advanced isn't equipment, isn't the room, it's not the acoustic, it's the knowledge and the amount of drive. Like knowledge stacks, that experience stacks, and it's not hardware. It's 2025. Like in this industry, with the way things are, the difference between this generation of sonics and audio and the next generation of sonics and audio is not going to be hardware. It's not going to be hardware. It's going to be that next big idea, that next big fusion of genres, that next big hit song. That's the new thing. That's what's going to push art, not hardware anymore. It's not the 70s and the 60s where it was hardware that's going to push the next level, right? It's not anymore. Even Atmos, it's not that. I'm not even going to get into that. Sincerely, on a personal level, if you do not feel that unquenchable thirst and drive for knowing how to mix better, I recommend you try other things. I'm serious. Like not that you won't make it within mixing, but that is like a vital part and a key indicator of growing into advanced levels of mixers. Like when you deal with bullshit from clients, your love and craft for mixing and music will help you deal with those. Like, of course, the Starbucks employee will flip out at the most casual, flippant, stupid thing a customer says because they don't want to be there.
Yeah.
But imagine a barista who actually loves coffee and they take their time and they do it. Like, if a client gets a little bit picky, they're like, oh, you know what? I do want to provide, like they're doing it to make you happy, not to like get a paycheck, right? And so I think that's important too.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yes. So that's why use your ears is the ultimate form of advice among advanced mixers. And why mix with the masters is sometimes just disappointing.
Lesson you're there of the day. Because, screw, yeah. Screw mix with the masters. We hate
no,
them.
No, 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 no. No, I'm a huge fan himself. And I'm a paying client. No, I okay, yeah, don't.
You've had like a transformative experience, but that's like another episode. But yeah, you with yeah, yeah, mix yeah. with the masters. So yeah.
So yeah, for now, over-focus on the technical. Learn all of the techniques, even if it's just god-awful, horrible YouTube advice. Learn it. And then, because learning that that was god-awful advice is worth its weight in gold years later.
Yeah.
Like, just that's find out part what you of the know. Learning process.
I feel like yeah, that's so frustrating in the beginning. You don't know what you don't know. Like,
yeah.
You don't know what automation is, so you don't even know how to learn it kind of thing. So just like, that's something that comes from watching as many videos as possible is you'll hear a phrase. You're like, I don't know what that means. You look it up. Now you know at least what you're not familiar with in that sense.
Yeah. This is an overgeneralization that I think is I'm willing to make. The best mixers that do the best across typically my observation, my biased observation across the board is the best mixers and the best craftsmen of any kind are curious, are super curious. They're not satisfied with, what is the Pultec move? Oh, the Pultec move is this? They ask, why is that used? What does it do? What is actually happening? Curiosity is what makes greater art in the higher levels. So continue to do that as well. All right, I think that's enough for this episode. What is mixing? Yeah. I hope that this helps. I hope that this is a lot more new information from the first one. If you want another episode about what is mixing, probably from a more beginner mindset, go to the third episode in this old, like it's 2019 episode. Go check it out when it was just me solo. And I really, really hope that this episode kind of helps you kind of put things into perspective in a practical way. And on that note, anything, James, that you want to add before I sign us off?
Yeah, we're starting up, we're moving the exclusive episodes over to Patreon. And so in the exclusive episodes, what we do, those are the ones that I host, TK and I kind of co-host it together. And it's very technical. So you notice this was very, the philosophical side, which is very important. But like we said, you need to kind of feed both ends. And so the exclusive episodes are, they're just focused on technical aspects. And we try to cover as wide a variety. We answer questions. We sometimes will... we've done mix breakdowns, and so you go and find that. And then we also will sometimes I don't know if debunk is the best word, but like you said, like there's some shitty
we'll
advice
talk about the nuance
on YouTube, but we'll be all like, yeah, we'll be all like, ah, especially when people are like trying to be like, you have to do this. We'll kind of just be like, no, you don't. But anyway, so that one's very focused on the technical. So if you want to develop your technical abilities as a mixer, those exclusive episodes will be on Patreon. And there's, I think we have cataloged like over 200, 250 episodes that you can already go back and start with. But we do those episodes weekly as well. And so, yeah, feel free to go check those out.
And because of Patreon, by the way, we don't have any current sponsors. We are the sponsors. So if you want to just leave us a tip, even if you don't listen to the exclusive episodes, you can just become a monthly subscriber. That is like one of the only ways to support us other than leaving 5-star reviews on whatever platform that you're using, which helps us algorithmically a ton. That being said, the exclusive content, go check it out. MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. You can see the entire catalog, see if any of it interests you. There's other goodies as well. Currently, there might be some other things like for signing up, you might get some merch or whatever. In the future. Currently, that's not available at the time of the recording of this episode. Extra PDFs, extra resources, possibly even like extra private things that I can't share on in public. But if I do anything, any sort of cool giveaways or anything like that, it's probably just going to be within Patreon subscribers. So go to that. That's going to be our main exclusive content and hosting platform from now on. The cool thing about Patreon is that if you are a Spotify, if you're listening to the podcast via Spotify, you can actually find this podcast, the exclusive content is going to be natively hosted on Spotify as a separate podcast. So it's going to be locked and it says you have to be a patron and you have to connect your Spotify account to the Patreon account and then it'll just show up as another podcast on Spotify natively. If you want to listen on Apple Podcasts or any other podcasting service, it will give you, once you sign up, it'll give you a custom RSS feed that you can very easily through the app or through the computer for Apple, for example, all you have to do is like file, add show with URL, and then just post that URL, that RSS feed, and boom, it shows up as another extra feed on Apple Podcasts. So you can listen to it natively on most other podcasting platforms. So, and that's again, just signing up for the Patreon. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much, James, for helping me co-host this episode. Thank you so much, everybody. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive.